Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn.
Welcome, welcome. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin. I'm here with Dr. Richard Tooley, and we're talking about teaching math. Math actually is one of the weak links, not just with homeschooling parents, but in education in general. The United States, we've fallen so far behind the other nations of what we consider the civilized, though every country is civilized, but we've fallen way below Korea and China and Europe in our math scores. And they've come out with all kinds of new curriculum products. And really, I think it boils down to the teacher. So today we're going to talk about teaching math. And we have talked about this before. So we're going to kind of continue from where we left off. We talked about, you know, starting at a very young age, having your children work with patterns, these little colored tiles of different geometrical shapes are fantastic. Have them work those. They are building a sense of pattern in the brain. Have them with place value every day. Talk about adding another day until you have a group of 10 days. And once you get to 100 days, 10 groups of 10, you have a big celebration for the 100th day of your schooling. We've talked about how to transfer that to regrouping, subtraction, and addition, column problems versus vertical problems. We've talked about multiplication and all the different ways you can really inspire your child to want to memorize. And I'm here to tell you that some children won't get all of them memorized. There might be a weak link, but that's all right. As long as they know how to get to it eventually, it really will come. And we kind of left off there with just a few strategies of, you know, keeping it interesting. So, Dr. Tooley, where should we begin today?
Well, you know, I think we need to begin with something that is an enigma to young people when they first face it. And that is called fractions.
Fractions. First of all, fractions are the most important mathematical or arithmetic element to be able to be successful in algebra. And it's amazing how all of these things tie in together. You know, you have your number theory, where you have lots of different problems that are just mind-boggling, and then you have your place value, and you have your geometry, and you have your algebra, and all of them need fractions. And you can start with, you know, those cute manipulatives that look like a pizza. Because if I just say to a student, which would you rather have, a half of a pizza or an eighth of a pizza? They always, you know, would rather have a half of a pizza. But if I say something like one half minus one eighth, duh.
Yeah, you think about a fraction.
Okay, well, I had one half minus one eighth, so two minus an eighth.
Right.
2 minus 8. So they immediately go there and they might go, well, I can't take 8 from 2, so I'll go ahead and take 2 from 8. Okay, 1 sixth. And I'll get that, you know.
Yes, yes, you will. You know, it's like you think about it. We present 1 half. We present 1 half is 1 of 2, or now we throw in 0.5. And how did 0.5 get in the middle of this? So fractions do kind of play with people's minds a little bit. But how do you take someone now? Do you give them like two blocks and say, okay, one half is one block? What do you do to get them to begin to understand that that bottom number has a purpose and how it fits?
Yeah, that is a good example. for third graders, we did actually start out with a rectangle that had two, that had a line in the middle of it. So we counted how many blocks were in that picture, and there's two. That goes on the bottom. Now, if we color one of the blocks in terms of a fraction, how much of that rectangle did we color in? And that goes on the top. And then the next problem might be a square with four blocks in it. Okay, how many blocks are there in this square? That goes on the bottom, four. Now, we're going to color in two of those blocks. So we put that number on the top. Now, look at the two pictures. They both really say one half. And that's a pretty simple illustration for you and I, but we actually do this thing. We have to understand equivalent fractions. We have to get that concept. So I always start with one half. And I'll just ask students, we're just going to go around and around and around, and you're going to tell me an equivalent fraction for one half until the whole board's filled up. And sometimes I get someone to help me do it. And so they'll, you know, some of them will, okay, one half, okay, two-fourths, especially if we just did the worksheet that had the squares that we colored in, two-fourths, and another few, okay, four-eighths, and then the others begin to get the idea. Oh, equivalent for one half is double the, on the bottom, what's on the top. You know, so we can have 1,000 over 2,000. You know, you'll have that, the kid that yells that out. Or 156. Oh, dear, I got to figure out now what 2 times 156. Why did I say that? You know, but often when we're doing fractions, doesn't matter what grade, if someone cannot remember equivalent fraction for one half, we'll ring a bell. Ding, 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 ding. Okay, it's one half equivalent fraction time because we need to review it. And we'll start it again. You know, someone else will be the scribe. I don't have to be the scribe. Just saying all the equivalent fractions for one half because that gives you a starting point. It also then helps you when you're reducing. Always check to see if it's a half. Always check. And then that transfers over to putting it into a decimal and then putting it into a percent.
You know, there's an interesting point here to make. Because what you describe in every one of these instances is to create fun.
Yes.
You know, in our frontal lobe is where our logic and reasoning comes in. And I know that there are a lot of young people, I'd tell them, you know, if I opened up the front of your head, I'd see a hole that went all the way to the back of your head because they don't have any logic and reasoning. But there's something else that resides in that area of the frontal lobe, too, and that's humor. So humor and logic and reasoning reside in the same space in the brain. Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of fun. So when you put something into fun, you actually are hitting the area of the brain that really does need to work to help them answer the question. So injecting humor or injecting fun into the learning process is a very important part. And math, by and large, is not what you'd consider a fun topic. But what sounds to me like you do is try to create community and fun and collaboration all at the same time when you're teaching them these concepts.
Yes, and I don't minimize the fact that math is hard because it was so hard for me. And so I use timers, and I'll say, okay, I'm working with this person. In a homeschool situation, I might be working with Susie. And so for 5 minutes, I want you to wrap your own brain around it. And the students will begin to say, Dr. Gamblin, I wrapped my own brain around this. You know, like they understand that wrapping their own brain around it instead of just trying to get the answers out of me or out of another student, they become proud of the fact they wrapped their own brain around it. And I need timers too because I can get so involved in working with one student that I neglect the other student. And in a homeschooling situation, this can be particularly challenging because you might have one student that is almost, they almost like teach themselves. And so they're not a squeaky wheel. They're over there doing all their work, and so you're focused now on that student that somehow has gotten you to spin around them. They figure out how to get the answers from you.
But you bring up an interesting point there with the timers. You know, it's amazing what you can get done in 5 minutes.
Yes.
And part of it is this. When we address math or any other topic, we tend as adults to be able to couple factoids or fact patterns together. And now we've got this thing that could take us hours to work on because we got this whole big picture that we're working on. We need to remember to break things down into swallowable pieces.
Yes, it's actually called chunking. And it really does help. It helps students stay focused. It helps them to, the timers. I collect timers. So I have some that are, some kind of things going through them. And some go up and some go down. And so I can actually give individual students their own timer if they need it. And I have my timer. So I'm making sure I get to everyone. But the timer itself, I have seen students that had a hard time focusing. That really became a great tool. And don't put long times on it. If it's just a 3-minute timer, 5-minute timer, that's no problem. You just flip it up and they work and you see how much they got accomplished in that amount of time. But if it's the kitchen timer that's, don't set it for too much time. There's just the brain needs to breathe. Just like we inhale and exhale, you need to allow the brain to inhale and exhale. And there's something about 5-minute or 10-minute time. And then, okay, look up. Let's look at this a different way. You know, we all experience this. You can play words with friends and you can just not figure out a word and then go away and then come back later. And, why didn't I think of that? That was right there in front of my face.
You know, you bring up a time frame, and we know that pretty much standard capacity for a person to be able to pay attention is about 20 minutes.
Yes.
Well, for a child, 20 minutes is a long, 20 minutes is a lifetime for a child.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were dealing with children, when you're dealing with these young people, you say 5 to 10 minutes, what would you standardize on more or less?
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break right here, and I'm going to give you that answer in just a moment. You've been listening to Homeschool Companion. You know, we'd love to hear from you. Be sure and like us on Facebook at Homeschool Companion or partner with us. Send us a contribution or a show suggestion at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland 21783 or call us at 301-824-3162. Welcome back. We're talking about math again, one of my favorite subjects. I'm here with Dr. Richard Tooley, and I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin. And you had asked me a question just before the break, if there was a standard. And I kind of have my own standards. I've done quite a bit of research on how the brain works, and I understand that we need movement and activity to really have knowledge connect. But we also need humor. You brought that out. You know, I think the 5-minute to 6-minute interval as far as direct teaching. So when I'm working with one group and doing direct teaching, then the other group has that amount of time to wrap their own brain around it, so to speak. That's my rule of thumb just because I know direct instruction shouldn't last over 10 minutes with any elementary student. There's just something about... There's two things that happen. They either zone you out if they can get by with it, or they rely on you to give the answer to solve the problem. So,
Yes. So
those two things you want to avoid. Now, as far as homework, I I do, and I know this is backed up by research, but I just don't have it here in front of me. If you are in the first grade, you shouldn't have more than 10 minutes of homework a night. So, but there should be 10 minutes of either reading quietly to yourself or, you know, or just playing a math game or something like that. There should be some. Second grade, 20 minutes. Third grade, 30 minutes. Fourth grade, 40 minutes. Fifth grade, 50 minutes. Sixth grade, 60 minutes. And then I do start with my students that are, you know, getting up there, fifth and sixth. They'll come the next day and not one of their homework problems, you know, and I only usually give like three or four homework problems. Not one is done. And I'll go, did you wrap your own brain around it? Well, I don't know how to do it. I go, did you try to figure out how to do it for at least 50 minutes? Well, no. Did you open your book? No, because I knew I didn't know how to do it. And that's one thing I appreciate about a homeschool situation is because the parent knows, you know,
yes.
They know. But in traditional school, that parent can be told by that child, well, I don't have any homework because I don't know how to do it, you know.
You know, parents might want to take a lesson here. So if you give a child 50 minutes worth of homework and parents are finding that that child's having a hard time doing 50 minutes worth of homework, they might want to take a timer and do
yes.
it in 5 and 6 minute chunks.
Yeah.
And that would help that child then take one concept for 5 or 6 minutes, get it, move on to the next one.
And homework could be, okay, read on your book for your reading report, study your spelling words. If you have a memory verse, memorize your memory verse, you know, work on memorizing your memory verse. So you can easily, if you break it into five disciplines, there's easily 50 minutes there.
Yeah, but 10 minutes each, mm-hmm. which is about right.
It could even include your, you know, music practice. Music is
yes.
just as important. We're going to talk about STEM or STEAM here soon. Yes, all of that being said, math is something you have to wrap your own brain around. And I want to talk a little bit about story problems.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a question, not on story problems, but see, we were talking about fractions and we've kind of deviated off of fractions.
Did.
But now here we have 1/2. Now, what happens to a fraction when I put A over 2?
Well, and that's the thing, whereas if you have, you know, of course, there's all of the properties of algebra. But if you have a good foundation in fractions, then you can understand that, you know, a over 2 is like 1/2 over 2. And so if you, let's say you had an algebraic expression and you wanted to get the a, you wanted to find out what a was from that, like a over 2 equals 3. So now I'm going to multiply both sides because I've learned in algebra and in math, if I multiply or divide both sides by the same number, I still have the same equation. So I'm going to multiply, we call it the multiplicative inverse or the reciprocal, whatever, you know, those are the two terms. So I multiply a over 2 by 2 over 1, but I have to do that to the other side too. So now I have a equals 6. Hey, well, yeah, that simple algebraic problem, they could have figured out in their head. And I always tell them, these first algebra problems, you can always figure in your head. So we have, you know, those very first algebra problems. We start now in third grade with algebra. Those very first algebra problems, I say, as much as I know you know how to figure this out in your head, let's do it algebraically because it's really fun. And it's really, you know, and they're like, oh, yeah, cool. We're like the 9th graders. We're like the 10th graders because we're going to figure this out in our head. A over 2 equals 3. And so then we go ahead and say we're going to multiply both sides by 2 because that way it will cancel out that 2 fraction there. And then the other side we multiply by the same number, 2. So A equals 6. Indeed, 6 over 2 equals 3. And they just feel so proud of themselves that they have been able to do it algebraically. But yeah, if you don't, you know, you've got to get the fractions. You've just got to get the fractions. Pretty soon you're going to have 1 minus x over 3 plus 2 minus x over four, you know, and then you're going to have to know how to find the common denominator, least yes. common multiple. You're going to have to know how to do greatest common factor. You know, and so all of those things are huge as far as we don't really realize how it all connects. But that's one subject that it just builds and builds and builds. And I want to end with talking about story problems, because most people and even teachers will shy away from story problems. It's a whole bunch of words, and it's so much fun to do all the problems and not have to read, but they're the most important thing. That's where we integrate language arts so much into math, is in the story problems. And so I say to my students, look at today, we get a bunch of stories. Now, who doesn't like a story? You know, so instead of saying story problem, it now becomes a story. And then I have them take turns. I'll go, okay, Annie, will you share with us the first story? So now she's reading to us a story. And you can just, it just totally changes the attitude of, oh, I got to work on a bunch of story problems, to, oh, I'm going to hear a story today.
Yeah. You know, as a young person, I always liked story problems because they were kind of like a whodunit.
Yeah.
Or like a little mystery. And yeah. How am I going to take these story problems now and actually convert them to something? So you have to go through a process, don't you, of helping them get the facts out of, extract the facts
yes.
out.
Yes. And story problems, you know, on a simple level, we're looking for the clues. And so I'll ask them, you know, okay, what's the first clue you see? Like maybe Johnny went to the store and he had $3.40. And when he got there, he saw this airplane that was for $2.75. So how much money did Johnny have left if he bought the airplane? Well, you know, the clues are pretty obvious in that simple story problem. So we can set up a column problem and do it pretty readily. But then you get into the story problems in the higher,
yes.
where it's, you know, there was X number of dollars, and so now you have essentially a linear equation that you need to set up so you can see the two different situations. You know, maybe you have a cargo carrier and your boxes are this size, and you want to have the best, you want to make the best decision of how many boxes of this size and how many boxes of that size to fit in this cargo carrier that's only so many square feet. So then now you're looking really at two linear equations, and where the lines meet, that is the best solution for the number of boxes. And so you try to take these story problems and make them real life experiences. This is where math can really connect to real life experiences.
Yeah.
I know we're running out of time, and it was so great to talk about math. I love the subject, and I'm so glad you listened to us today. And I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.